I think the evidence pretty strongly says centralized companies are winning. There's huge returns to scale. Nothing is safe. And society is going to be transformed completely fundamentally. Like, people are no idea what's coming. As the economy changes to be much more AI driven, all the financial primitives that we're used to are going to undergo a transformation as well. So that's payments, capital markets, lending, insurance. Every time you go through a big platform shift, you sort of re-architect financial services. We're seeing that now. Okay, let's just do like this AI thing, but put crypto on top, right? So let's do model training, but have token incentives. So I think they are, I don't know that they're the right direction. The right direction is to use crypto what it's good for. And number one, trading and value exchange and capital markets. And then number two, payments, which is commerce, which is again, value exchange. I think we're gonna have to really feel the danger and destruction of the current approach.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the All In Crypto podcast. I am your host, Rupert Pickering, and today we're joined by Lex Sokolin, the managing partner and co-founder of Generative Ventures, where he invests in seed and series A across fintech, Web3, and AI with a focus on the machine economy. Yes, we're going to be talking about robots today, perhaps not in the way you think. You know, we're not getting into the iRobot realm, or perhaps we will do. We'll see. He's previously been a chief economist and CMO at Consensys, which we're all familiar with here in the cryptocurrency space, helping shape thinking around Ethereum, MetaMask, DeFi, and token economics. Before crypto, he worked across Wall Street at the likes of Lehman, Barclays, Deutsche Bank, and he's also the author of the FinTech Blueprint newsletter. Lex, it's great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Very excited to have you on. And really where I want to start is you invest around the idea of a machine economy. Paint that picture for us. You know, what is it? Who are the machines in that economy? And what's the first real signs we've entered it?
Great.
Loaded question.
So, who are the machines? We're all the machines. So I co-founded the venture fund in 2023. It was right after the collapse of the crypto markets. You might remember like FTX falling apart and everything at the bottom. But it was also the inflection of ChatGPT. So it was maybe a year into people starting to use LLMs, and it wasn't yet clear what kind of business models there were going to be. And so me and my co-founder took a moment to think about like, what does the world look like for the next 5 to 10 years where we can have an investment theme that is resilient and relevant for a longer time? My career has been about financial services. I think about financial systems and economic systems. That's the stuff I like. And I think what today is pretty obvious, it was a little bit less obvious then, is that an enormous amount of economic growth is going to come from AI. And that means software robots in the form of agents doing things. That means hardware robots doing things in the physical world, Figure, Tesla, and so on. It also means people that are augmented by technology that are using AI tools. So you have like this absolute massive expansion of productivity and capability coming out from intelligence being turned into software. And there are lots of investors that are good at that stuff. You know, that's their job, to find the labs that build the AI companies and so on. Whereas I think what we are good at is figuring out the financial systems that need to change to participate in that world. Right. So the premise is that as the economy changes to be much more AI driven, all the financial primitives that we're used to are going to undergo a transformation as well. So that's payments, that's capital markets, lending, insurance, the various risk systems. Every time you go through a big platform shift, you sort of re-architect financial services. And, you know, so that we're seeing that now. We've seen that with Stripe, with Google, with Anthropic, with Coinbase, starting to build out various agentic protocols. And I think there's lots of interesting companies at the intersection of AI, fintech, and crypto that are in the space.
Yeah. What do you think this means for everyday individuals? I think this is always a important question to ask because, you know, you can really go throughout history and find landmarks where technology has been introduced to us and how it's changed the kind of economic model of civilization. What do you think this kind of change, this technological change means for everyday individuals broadly? Does it mean a kind of change from plowing the fields to working in offices? I mean, what's the kind of broad change going on here?
I mean, I can handle the macro question, but the micro question, again, within sort of our framework, you know, let's say you're a person that wants to buy a chair and it's 1820. You're going to go to the market, you're going to pay cash for that chair, and then you're going to bring it home and put it in your house. Let's say it's the late 1900s and you want to buy a chair, you might go into a mall, right? Because you've got commerce organized in malls or supermarkets with these delivery architectures. and you might use a credit card, something that was built in the 60s and 70s by the banks as part of a network consortia. And then in 2005, you might go on an e-commerce site and you might, to buy that chair, put your credit card information into a payment processor like PayPal for checkout. And if it's 2015 and you're using, let's say, Shopify, you end up on a website or in a mobile app with that chair and your intent goes into a platform that's connected to Stripe. And Stripe is routing that payments through software code into the card networks between the banks. So each one of these kind of shopping experiences, they're, nothing's changed for the person. They're buying a chair. It's just what their commerce experiences is different. And every time you have a new platform to do that, you end up with different and new financial companies that intermediate it, you know, and often they're kind of stacked on top of each other like a pyramid. What's been interesting this time around is the big tech companies and the sort of new crop of fintech companies are really rushing ahead to try and not be disintermediated, you know, so we're seeing Stripe, we're seeing Shopify playing for this new agentic space ahead of time. So I think in terms of like, in terms of day to day for a lot of people, they might get a new consumer experience. They might behave in a slightly different way. They might go to ChatGPT and say, I want to buy a chair. And then that will serve up a commerce experience inside of chat, and that commerce experience is going to get wired into Stripe and maybe stable coins and so on and so forth. But for the person, not much is going to change. I think your actual other question is much bigger. Like, are we all going to be serfs in some giant, yep, like AI medieval nightmare? I'm happy to take that on.
Yeah. Give us a take on that before we move on. Because when we talk about these platforms that kind of govern commerce as it is, They're kind of walled gardens in many cases. Whereas if we're talking about agentic agents, where we're going to go following this kind of big question that is of interest to me and many people, is how does that work? You kind of need to decentralize these centralized systems, which we'll come on to. But let's talk about the kind of ominous, I guess, advance of AI and this kind of road to serfdom, perhaps. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this question probably, I mean, there's lots of people who've been thinking about it for a very long time. And for me, maybe a decade, 15 years. You know, the first company I started was a robo-advisor in 2010. And it was like, how do you automate financial advice? And my pitch was like, aha, you know, Wall Street's taking 1.5% of your money to do nothing. Why don't we just make some software? It'll save you money and you'll get a better investment experience. These days, this, like, obviously we all have that available to us and 1,000 times more. And I remember doing this in 2010 and feeling very sort of like brave about attacking the financial advisor space and you know, denigrating their craft in a way. And I came across by 2013, 14 across a different kind of company. It was a company at the time called, it's been a while. But what it did is that it used neural art styles to filter photos. So you could upload a photo and you would get back that photo in the style of Picasso or in the style of, you know, Van Gogh or whatever. It was using very early neural networks and like deep style algorithms from Google, which was kind of like reverse machine vision. And this was super early, 2014, 2015. The stuff that we have now with image generation, generative AI is like a million times better. But it was the first time where I saw like actually the creative act of making art can just be done by robots. And now people can carry around in their pocket every artist that ever existed and apply it to any of their photos. I grew up doing a bunch of visual arts and doing web design. And that's sort of my entry into tech in addition to all the finance background. And so I went from being like, haha, these financial advisors, you know, like we're going to take away all this value that they've been keeping for themselves, and being pretty profoundly affected by the fact that like my very personal hobby that I cared about and cultivated since ever was completely irrelevant. And a computer was doing it better than me in 2014, you know, and fast forward to today, like very obviously nobody should go learning illustration. Like that's just not a thing to be doing. And that is now also true, not just for kind of like the basic senses of text generation or reasoning about text or concepts or images or video or, you know, music and sound. Like those things are demonstrably good enough. And we're way beyond like vision and hearing and translation. It's now like really complex, abstract workflow skills that agents can do, or AI controlled by people can do. So obviously coding is now at a level better than most developers. There's all sorts of like vertical AI companies, from, you know, Harvey to the medical ones, to the marketing ones, to Cursor and so on, that go and solve industry problems better than junior workers who need to be trained up. And so for me, like it's just been 15 years of watching the human competitive advantage completely melt away.
Yep.
You know, including like some things that I had very romantic ideas about, like creativity won't be automated, or this is the dumbest one, empathy won't be automated. And it's like empathy has obviously been automated much better potentially than like the number one, that's not true, but one of the top capabilities of ChatGPT is to play you like a fiddle by giving you fake empathy and ego boosting in order to make you feel good about, you know, doing obvious things, basic things, you know, like you make an omelet, you're the best omelet maker in the world because nobody can do it like you. So empathy, emotional labor, all of these things are things that AI can do. The only thing we haven't yet gotten to any sort of like these recursive loops where AIs have their own utility functions or their own goals beyond what people are prompting them to do. But we're getting there, right? Any sort of automation or self-driving loops or multi-agent systems get you to a place where you can have a self-driving AI steering its own goals. So it's not far. Anyway, all that to say is I think the evidence pretty strongly says the centralized companies are winning. There's huge returns to scale. Nothing is safe. And society is going to be transformed completely fundamentally. Like people have no idea what's coming. And so from a positioning perspective, like the only defense I think you have is to own the robots. You know, if we all think that broadly speaking, robots and robot money and the machine economy is where things are tilting towards, and I don't see any evidence to the contrary, then the only thing we can do is own the robots to participate in at least some of that exposure. You know, if you bring crypto in it, there is the sort of idealistic narrative of like, we can all own the robots in the same way that we all own Bitcoin or Ethereum. And like, oh man, I wish that were true. And as a fund, we've funded things to try and make that happen. The reality is, I think it is very, very difficult to swim against the current. But you know, there are possible escape valves. You know, but that said, again, like, it's better to just expect the harshest outcome, because
anything better so far, that's right? Yeah.
Yeah. It is what it is, right? Like, let's not fool ourselves.
Yeah, I think when you get to a state where AI is just simply better than human beings, even at things like empathy, I mean, chess, right? The greatest chess player in the world won't even bother to play the computer on hard mode, because he's just like, there's just no point. It'll beat me and I'm the best in the world. So this is kind of, you know, what do we get relegated to in that world? I don't think I have the full answers for. I think, you know, I brought the agricultural revolution. That obviously displaced a lot of people, but then a kind of new industry was found. You know, maybe something like that happens. What that industry is could be worth figuring out. But to kind of have an investment in this could be akin to, you know, the bookstore getting replaced by Amazon. You know, you're investing in that new technology that does things better. And of course, there's opportunity there. And if we can decentralize it, that would be very interesting. Let's get back to sort of agents. Agents, I think, are clearly coming. And I think one thing that I think about with agents in relation to decentralization is it seems that the only way to me, and we'll discuss this, that agents can truly work across all platforms is if you have some sort of a decentralized standard of identity, permissions, and settlement. In a kind of centralized model, that interoperability basically doesn't really work without one or a couple of gatekeepers. So is decentralization a requirement for the machine economy to work?
I would like it to be. I want to invest in companies that have a real shot at becoming the counterweight to big tech and what is now big fintech, less so the banks. Because I think you can have much more global outcomes, you know, more people can benefit, and there's sort of an idealistic nature to it. To date, that has not proved to be super fruitful. I mean, there is a handful of kind of crypto AI and deepen projects that we really like. Like, we're an early investor in Peak, which is a layer one for deepens. They've got 5 million devices that are attached for identity and kind of cross machine payments and things like that. But you are competing with 400 million users for ChatGPT, right? Or you're competing with Elon Musk and XAI raising whatever it is, $50 billion, buying Twitter, folding it in, and running distribution off of that. So the way that I think about it is it's nice to have, but it won't necessarily happen. And there's some clear analogies, you know. So for example, music file sharing in like the early 2000s started with people ripping their CDs and saving MP3s locally, and then file sharing those MP3s through Napster or other file sharing services, right, that were like peer-to-peer. Eventually that became BitTorrent, and a lot of that sort of inspired Bitcoin and Ethereum. And for a few years, in kind of the chaos of this internet moment, all music was free, effectively, if you knew where to find it. You know, Apple built a huge business on top of stolen music by creating the iPhone. You know, the iPhone came preloaded with all the stolen MP3s from Napster. They didn't have Apple Music yet. But after 3 or 4 years of uncertainty, what you ended up with was the iTunes store, and Spotify, right? So fast forward 15 years, most people are just using Spotify as a centralized platform where they own nothing but the ability to stream songs. You know, underneath Spotify is all of the sort of like streaming protocols based on BitTorrent and those technologies, but it's a highly centralized company. I mean, most people like it. It's just not great to be a musician because you don't make that much. The exact same patterns at a much larger scale happened with the entire internet, right? So before Google, you had a bunch of standalone portals that would have humans that would index the internet into categories, you know, like Yahoo, AOL, and so on. And people would create websites, and those websites would be kind of the replacement for books or magazines. They'd be like the atomic unit of content for the internet. And you would bounce around and find things. And again, it was like this chaos for a while. And then with Google becoming the interface on top, like it was the best interface, and it just organized the entire experience of the internet into the Google search box, and then layered AdWords and monetization through advertising on top of the internet. And the last 20 years are characterized by ad-driven monetization of the internet and all the problems that's created, right? All the way through social media and our addiction to sort of like very punchy social media content. Like all of this comes through the ad monetization model. If we didn't have advertising as the core revenue for the internet, we would be very different creatures. Yep. You'd be less stressed out, less suicidal, you know, probably more social. All of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So again, like Spotify centralized all of music file sharing. Google stole all of the internet, the entire set of human knowledge, right? And now we're seeing the same thing happening for inference, for thinking, not just for like facts and data, but for like, how do you reason about the future and who does the work, you know? And so we're in this chaos phase in the same way as we did with music and file sharing, right? Where there was like idea, you could think there was going to be an open source version of that or a P2P version of that. And with the internet, which started out P2P and very decentralized with these forum communities, and it's the same thing now. Like there are all these open source models coming from China. You know, like there's stuff coming out from Meta in open source, and then you have a couple of extremely large players that are forcing a centralization function where they are stealing all of human reasoning. Full stop. Like all human thinking and logic and creative capacity is just going to be focused into the brains provided by, you know, two or three companies. And I think it's, I don't think there's anything at all that will stop that, you know? So the only thing we can do as an industry is try to, crypto people don't like the word regulate, but I mean, we do like the word governance, you know, like, okay, we like the word governance. Fine. We'll DAO govern vote how OpenAI should behave through the law. Because you can have very, very different outcomes based on how that company grows. So I do think we need to have like a humanistic view as it relates to the big AI companies and what they can do. And then we can also create as much self-sovereignty as possible, right? So self-sovereignty is privacy. It's dignity, meaning like the ability to do your own work. And maybe have separation between the robot economy and the human economy in some sense. You know, but I don't think we can get away from the trend.
Lots of questions on that. You know, it very much seems like that's the way everything's going. If history is anything to go by, it seems quite obvious that that's going to continue. I guess at what point do we perhaps hamstring all of this, but then in doing so, you've got the other side that should it even be hamstringed, or should we let it kind of do its thing and see what kind of a world we end up in as a result of all of that? I mean, the thing that blows my mind is I don't think the vast majority of the human population is thinking about this right now. And I think they should be, because this is going to directly, people don't realize just how you know, you spoke about some serious ramifications of this kind of ad-driven model in regards to the human psyche, you know, more sort of suicides and things like this happening on the back end of the kind of oligopoly that we have over the tech world. AI could potentially be significantly more dangerous, yet most people aren't thinking about it. And I guess the question is, well, what do we do about it? Should we do anything about it? So on and so forth. This is a huge conversation that we're opening that I think I have none of the answers for, if I'm being quite honest. Could you envision, think about Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin's amazing for many reasons. I think one of which is the movement that it is. So it basically, one man, if you believe the Satoshi story, or woman, or whoever, came up with this idea of using technology to kind of combat the traditional banking system. Whether it's still doing that today or not is another topic. But really, there's a choice being made. People kind of understood the system that we have and the control over the financial systems. Said, okay, well, let's opt for this. Do you think something like that could happen with AI, like a kind of Bitcoin-esque AI crypto project where people choose that over the kind of techno-feudalist world that we seem to be advancing towards?
Yeah, so you said techno-feudalist, so I want to say... you know, it's like the alternative is like the Hobbesian nightmare of being in the trenches of Solana, like losing all your money constantly on crypto AI fraud scams, of which there have been like a material amount. I think people are trying to do what you say. You know, we had kind of a cycle top at the end of 2024 with BitTensor and Autonolos and some of the stuff around decentralized GPUs like Render and Akash. You know, Virtuals was an interesting experiment in financializing agents. So I think people are trying. I mean, Venice on top of Morpheus was an attempt to gather users, was sort of like a DuckDuckGo privacy approach to it. It has on its face not worked, right? There's no real usage there, and most of it was kind of farmed into oblivion and then destroyed by financialization. So I think the answer is absolutely yes, there will be a counter reaction to what you describe, but I think we're way off on timelines, right? So you often have like a reaction and then a counter reaction and then a counter reaction to the counter reaction and so on. So if you think about it, you've got the 2008 financial crisis. Where does the 2008 financial crisis come from, right? So you have the internet boom, you have a huge amount of money being made from technology, and then collapse in prices, and then the Fed responding to that by easing rates, right? Trying to save the regular person by making money super cheap so they don't blow up. So again, trying to save the consumer, the normal person, from like the crash of the internet bubble. And then those rates are held very low for a long time, and you start creating the housing bubble. And so the counter reaction to the low interest rates is like this horrible underwriting of mortgage-backed securities and low quality credit risks being taken on, and eventually, you know, blowing up half of the Wall Street financial industry. And so the government steps in to backstop that, because if you don't backstop that, like it's not like a oops, you know, 5% down, it's like 40% of everything wiped out. And so the counter reaction to that is Bitcoin is, well, why do they get to be bailed out and we don't get to be bailed out? So let's create something that nobody can ever bail out. And so you get Bitcoin. And that starts to gain steam. And the counter reaction to Bitcoin is, well, what a nice macro trade, but it's not about Bitcoin, it's about blockchain, right? So in early 2014, 2015, you have a bunch of companies that are like Digital Asset, which is now Canton Network, which is, I think, like an $8 billion network. R3, Ripple start getting, you know, enterprise blockchain. All of this is a counter to the Bitcoin rise. The counter to the not Bitcoin, but blockchain theme is Ethereum and ICOs, right? So we're going back into decentralization and we have decentralized capital markets, permissionless capital markets. You know, the counter reaction to that is security tokens. The counter to security tokens became DeFi. And after DeFi, you know, it swung back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And now it's like stablecoins and RWA, or is it meme coins and prediction markets? I mean, it's all the same wobble back and forth wave. So it takes a bit of time to kind of for this stuff to converge on the actual answer and for it to be implemented. But for it to be implemented, you actually have to know that something's happened, right? So like, how long did Bitcoin have to be around for people to even notice that this was a potential path to explore?
Long time.
And so I think when we, it's a long time. And if you look at AI, like you said, like people do not understand what is happening. Like if you are a 16-year-old kid and you want to have an internship at a newspaper, like you're not going to get an internship at a newspaper. Like there's no newspaper and there's no internship. Like it's done. There's no point. And I think it'll take a while to actually understand that hollowing out, you know, and sometimes I worry about like being kind of a crazy person. Cause like all this sci-fi stuff is catnip for
crazy people,
for tech people who like it. Yeah. And it kind of can drive you insane, but after seeing how it's going for the last decade, like it really is happening exactly the way that, you know, people warned us about. And so I think we're going to have to really feel the danger and destruction of the current approach in the same way that, you know, Facebook and the Russian interference in the American election and sort of like the Trump controversy in the first Trump presidency, like, you know, whatever your political affiliation, you will remember that people were talking about Cambridge Analytica and Facebook got all this blowback and then Zuckerberg got roasted in Congress, you know. And so that was like the point at which people said, well, maybe social media is not super duper good. And I think that has to happen with AI as well, right? Like we have to slam our face into the wall before the counter reaction is really going to be valuable, because right now everybody is happy to make the Faustian bargain. Like in the same way that people would be happy in 2007 to put up all of their private information on Facebook, including their kids, you know, and family, and tag them all and be like, hey, NSA, here's my whole family and all my neighbors, right? The same way today for $20 a month, I am personally very happy to take all my personal documents and shove them into ChatGPT because it's fantastic. We don't yet know sort of like the price, but we'll find out.
Yeah. And I think we could probably speculate on what that finding out looks like. I mean, there are many kind of sci-fi novels that would, you know, give us ideas in regards to that. I just hope it's not too severe, but, you know, often the way that we learn, certainly in younger life, is through making mistakes, getting burnt, and then, you know, learning to ride the bike eventually. Let's come back to sort of crypto and perhaps AI. So we sort of touched on, look, could a kind of crypto enabled AI competitor work? And, you know, it's possible, but is it plausible? And you also brought up an analogy of the cryptocurrency space going from a kind of anti-banking system with a pushback with the likes of Ripple, R3 and these kind of companies being very friendly towards banks, actually using this technology to enable them. Do you see blockchain technology enabling AI and playing a role in AI?
I think different crypto investors have different views on the purpose of the space as applied to the both AI and maybe robotics downstream. You know, there's a lot of some people will talk about decentralization as a counter to big tech, and some people will talk about crowdsourcing, you know, crowdsourcing of intelligence, of data, of machinery, of sensors, and so on. And that's very much like crowdsourcing the mining of Bitcoin or the bootstrapping of capital, the way that ICOs bootstrap capital. But I think the mistake is to say we're just going to attach these crypto mechanisms to the same thing that the AI industry is doing. You know, so we did this with every other sector, right? Like we said, gaming, but it's Web3 gaming. You know, so it's like, it's just going to be video games, but we're going to put tokens in there and everyone's going to want it. Or SocialFi, right? Like it's just going to be like Twitter and Facebook. We're going to put tokens in there and everybody's going to like that. And like, nobody likes that. Nobody likes Web3 gaming, and there is nobody using, you know, Farcaster pivoted out of its own stuff. Lens isn't really online, not to mention sort of like the things that were outright scams and rug pulls. And so the mistake we keep making with AI, and it's a mistake that we have made as an investor as well, is being like, okay, let's just do like this AI thing, but put crypto on top, right? So let's do model training, but have token incentives, or let's create a GPU network, but it's going to be token driven. Like these are sort of first order ideas, and you have to do them to figure out what's next. But I think they are, I don't know that they're the right direction. I think the right direction is to use crypto what it's good for. And so far, crypto is good for, number one, trading and value exchange in capital markets, and then number two, payments, which is commerce, which is again value exchange. So you had the same tension of freedoms, like going back to Napster, right? Where Napster was like, as a teenager, like, I want to be free to share music. It's the same thing as I want to be free to own the robots, versus people enforcing digital rights management, saying no, this is copyrighted. It should only be sold to you by Apple or by the music label, which is the same thing as Bitcoin. Bitcoin says my Bitcoin is yours, only mine, and you cannot copy it. You know, unless I have full economic ownership of this particular scarce Bitcoin, whereas a music file is infinite and infinitely replicable. It's not scarce. That was the problem. That's why you have the advertising model. With crypto, it's in fact a huge digital rights management system, or it's an economic property system. You know, like the evil music labels in 2002 would have loved the crypto industry because they would have solved this, right? And we sort of had a little bit of this with the NFT boom, where people were like, finally, artists can again sell digital services that are scarce. Now for AI, we are in a world of now the extreme version of everything is free, right? Like not just like content that's been made can be copied, but like any content can be made infinitely for free and distributed everywhere. And so like at the extreme, it's just AI slop meshed into advertising, right? And we don't own anything, we just consume it. So I think blockchains, what do? They tilt it in the opposite direction. They create digital rights management on top of AI. They create economic property rights on top of the things that go into AI, the things that come out. They create human identity. They can create robot identity. They can take the enormous amorphous intelligence goo that is like LLMs served to you by Anthropic and OpenAI, and they can split them up into little independent and ownable minds and agents, right? So like, if you're going to buy like a robot dog, I would be much happier and more comfortable if I knew that this robot dog was distinct, that it was private to me, that I would teach it with my interactions, and then that teaching would stay with the dog and not go into a giant goo cloud of all other robot dogs, you know? And so blockchain is how you subdivide this thing into units that I think people can interact with and understand, because right now it is the sort of like Cthulhu scale sort of unknown giant thing. But outside of blockchain, like that's Apple's design philosophy as well, right? Like without blockchain, Apple would move in that direction too. So there is a role to play. It is an economic and financial role, but we're still in the very early innings.
So when you look at all these kind of technologies converging, and a major change that's taking place to our world. How do you look at that as an investor? You know, is it just a case of investing in the big companies that kind of have the monopoly and are likely going to continue to do so? Or, you know, how do you look at this as an investor? That's a question for you.
Yeah. It's something we've been thinking a lot about, especially coming into 2026, because I think from a thematic perspective, again, a lot of this has gotten popularized. From an implementation perspective, it's quite challenging, right? So like, what are the current markets in which you can participate, right? Like we're a venture investor. And so that already sort of like narrows down our role. But as an individual, you can think about different ways to participate, right? Like you could be in the public markets buying NVIDIA and its components. And I think in 2025, tech investors that understood the AI value chain did extremely well, much, much better than any crypto token investor, right? Yep. Like tech investors who put money into NVIDIA, you know, Micron, Constellation, Bloom Energy, and a bunch of that downstream value chain from CapEx, even in Google and so on, are up 50% to 400%.
Yeah.
If you are so thank God we're not a liquid token fund, but if you're a liquid token fund with an AI mandate and you bought a bunch of crypto AI tokens that were seen as like reasonable tokens, you are down 80% on 2025. And this is, maybe the projects are not all bad and scams. It's more that the market structure in altcoins is broken, you know? So most of the value of altcoins has been absorbed by centralized exchanges who use them as free catnip for their launch pads. You know, so BNB goes up and then every project that launches on Binance goes down. On top of that, like the vesting schedules are a lose-lose, both for venture investors like us, who obviously, you know, don't want to be restricted, and then for retail, who are just going to spend 4 years waiting for some of these tokens to bleed out and then forget about them. You know, like as an example, you know, like Lido, which is a pretty good project, is almost done with its vesting, you know, but nobody's like, finally, I can go and buy Lido, right? Like the reputation, the flavor is already gone. And so it's the same thing with the crypto tokens in the space. So we have a bit of a hangover. And then the third place you could play is private markets, you know, so private equity, secondaries of the robotics companies, the AI labs, the data companies. And if you were an early investor in any of those, you are up probably 10x, you know, if not more. I mean, those were incredible investments. There's a whole bunch of market activity there that I think is just like absolutely atrocious. You know, so there are all these secondary sales of like XAI and Anthropic at $300 billion valuations going into SPVs with 20% management fees. And it's just like, why are these guys selling and who's brokering it? Like the whole thing just feels off. So, you know, I don't know that now it just seems like the risk reward is not good there as well. So yeah, those are sort of the three directions, and you have to figure out how to navigate going forward. I think, like personally, I think I'm still long the equities market, even though I think we're very toppy in terms of AI valuations. I don't think we're done yet. And so I'm not saying like go super long some data provider or component company that's already done, but general exposure to big tech is still reasonable. On the venture side, like we're now very, very micro in our decisions. Like we're staying in the machine economy lane, but we're really, really focused on kind of like fundamentals and the qualities of teams and the revenue that they generate.
lots of questions on the back end of that. What would need to excite you as a venture firm in regards to the cryptocurrency space? You know, I've been in this industry since 2012, the cryptocurrency space. First heard of it through Silk Road, which was a very interesting time, and have sort of stuck with it since and done very well from it. But what would excite you right now in regards to the cryptocurrency space as a venture firm and get you back into playing that? It kind of seems, I agree with what you're saying entirely, but I wonder how does that view change in regards to getting excited about the cryptocurrency space once again?
Yeah, I guess there are two places where I was a bit surprised. The first is how quickly Stripe and Coinbase moved towards agentic payments, you know, and Google and Anthropic. It's either, you know, the X402 protocol with stablecoins on Base, or it's Stripe's acquisition of Privy and Bridge, and then partnerships with like all the large fintechs. The speed with which they've moved into that space is just nothing like I've seen before into an unproven market. I thought there'd be time for companies to kind of experiment a bit more before you got the incumbents in there. But I think around that, what that shows to me is that you can definitely build a adjacent company to that that's much more focused on like actual implementation and demand generation and attached to real customers. You know, so like, I'm sure that a smart enough team can move faster than Stripe and Coinbase on those themes and snatch a bunch of customers, but they do have to go to Web2 customers. They can't go after Web3 and play like the airdrop game. Like they have to figure out how to work with Suno and Cursor and, you know, 11 Labs and companies that actually have usage. So I think that opportunity is still there, and we're very actively looking for companies that are doing payment orchestration, DeFi orchestration, credit extension, you know, billing, financial management, wallets of things that just attach to those workflows. You know, and then I think there's a second direction, which is already kind of proven out, but that is financial services done better, right? So, you know, stablecoins have replaced a fintech theme called embedded finance. You know, so for a while, people were like, we're going to put a bunch of APIs on top of banks and broker dealers, and those are going to be the financial functions inside of applications. And I think stablecoins and DeFi are just a much better way of doing that because out of the box, they come with ledgers and so on. So we're definitely looking at financial applications that are replacing these financial rails, you know, but those tend to be slightly more incremental companies.
Yep. And there are often companies attached to them, not just the token, I think, which some people, a lot of sort of retail investors don't gain access to. How are you looking at 2026 as a kind of closing question, Lex? Are you kind of bullish overall on 2026? You know, if you talk about the US equity market, it just seems to go up and up, and it's been quite concentrated based on CapEx, like you said, in regards to the kind of tech sector, AI sector. Do you think there's more of that coming in 2026? Are you bullish on 2026 as a year for equities? What's your thoughts?
I think in equities and on the private markets, I think we're going to be risk on for another 6 months. I mean, these are often just like a guess in the dark. But to me, it seems that there's huge geopolitical competition. You know, like these are national efforts. You know, it's China versus the US, end of the day. It could be a friendly competition. It can be an aggressive competition, but it is a competition, you know, and it's hard to imagine a complete failure mode that it would be allowed to completely fail out. So I think you're going to have continued kind of run. Google has shown that it could catch up, you know, and so I think big tech is in the game. I think on the private side, you're going to have a bunch of the marquee names IPO, and that's going to drive just a lot of interest. I think once the IPOs are live, it's going to be difficult to own them in the sense that I doubt they're going to hold value, but through the process, like while everything is going public, right? Like it's going to be super exciting to see OpenAI go public, to see Anthropic go public, to see the robotics companies. Like it's just going to be amazing. So that's still ahead of us. On crypto, it's been so sideways for so long that it's hard to tell. I don't think that we're risk on yet. I think we're in the blockchain, not Bitcoin, or security token offering or real world asset part of the curve of the phase. Like that's the phase. There will always be a push to the other direction, but right now we're very much in the conservative part of it. And I think, you know, like the vesting schedule overhang needs to get cleaned out. The exchange model needs to get cleaned out. We probably need to see one or two of the scam chains really fail. So I'm much more, you know, I think we're in the bad part of the prisoner's dilemma in crypto. Like anybody who is long-term holding things on TGE is not experiencing good returns. So I'm not really sure how we get out of that. And again, from an investment perspective, like it's just all the investment decisions are very like one case by case, you know, founder driven and demand driven.
I think, like I say, if you look at what happened on October the 10th, you know, if I had a venture firm or a large sort of pool of capital, I'd be looking at that event and going, there's no way we can take that risk. You know, you're talking about some of these tokens sold off to the tune of, you know, 60, 70% in a matter of like half an hour, like some of the larger cap tokens.
Yeah. I mean, just to your first point, like it's not even the thing going down. It's the realization is very quickly like, this market is fake. These are not real assets. Like it's much worse than you lost money, right? I mean, it's bad for
That's
people
bad, yeah.
to blow up and lose money 100%, you know, but the realization that like this whole game, which is supposed to be the honest one, is just completely vaporware, and it's vaporware software, and then it's vaporware capital markets, right? Like thin floats and completely market made volume, and like so I think that's it's really corrosive, you know. And it does not have to be that way. It really doesn't. It's just for whatever reason. Actually, no, I think because we are so global as a crypto industry, the norms of capital markets have gone to the lowest common denominator, you know? So, like if you're an American investor buying stocks on the NASDAQ, you're not experiencing this unless it's the 1980s, you know? But if you are a Chinese investor or a Filipino investor, you know, like, or you're trading on the Pakistan stock markets, you're going to see the exact same patterns
100%.
For equities. And so sort of like all that stuff has spilled into crypto exchanges. And I think it does create a really difficult dynamic. I don't have the answers. I hope somebody does.
Yeah, me too. Lex, we're out of time. I would love to have asked you about AI 2027 and the kind of prophesied market crash on the back end of that. I think that's a very interesting question, but hopefully we can have you back on sometime. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. It's been lovely to meet you. Is there anywhere you want to send people in regards to yourself and what your company does if they want to check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the venture side, check out genventures.xyz. If you're an entrepreneur, would love to talk to you. We are deploying carefully. And then on the newsletter side, check out fintechblueprint.com.
Thank you very much, Lex. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll see each and every one of you in the next podcast. Thanks for watching, everyone. See you soon.